Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Yelton, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome to Utopia. Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast, recording for you on a Tuesday afternoon. Great to be with you. I am Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast. Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays. I know most of you know that, but for the benefit of those of you who are just stumbling upon to the podcast, maybe you searched Houston Texans or something like that, and up popped Utopia. I really appreciate you joining me here. We are a couple days removed from the draft. We've got a lot of questions to get into from the mailbag. As promised, we will do. This will be I think this is a bigger edition than normal of the mailbag that we will get to. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, the mailbag episode that got squashed last week because there was no audio on it. That's on me. I'm the one who does all the engineering for this. Unfortunately, of the 8 or 10 questions we had on there, like 7 of them were about the draft, which is now obviously in the books. But we've got a lot of other good questions to get into. Still some lingering thoughts from the draft. A lot of them captured in the emails that we have here. I guess just to, let's get the administrative stuff out of the way. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, please do so. Hit the subscribe button so that you get it automatically. That helps all of us, as does a rating and a review, especially good ones. So if you are enjoying the podcast, or if you, if you're finding it for the first time, and a small sample size, but after one episode, if you're like, man, I really like this, I would recommend you go tell people about it. So subscribe, rate, and review. And then, as I mentioned, this is a mailbag episode. So if you want to email, if you didn't get an email in this time, if you want to get one in for next week, we do a mailbag, at least one mailbag every week, houmailbag@gmail.com, houmailbag@gmail.com. Before we get into the mailbag, just a few lingering things from the draft and Texans related stuff. First, rookie minicamp begins on May 9th, I believe it is. So the Texans rookies will get their feet wet, doing rookie stuff on, I believe, May 9th or May 12th. So we'll get our first look at the rookies that weekend, Mother's Day weekend. And in advance of that, Nick Caserio is going to join myself and Seth Payne on Payne and Pendergast sometime next week. I don't have a date and time yet, but this will be Nick's first time on with us since the draft. So we've got a lot of draft stuff to get into with him, the roster, where we are, do we expect any more moves, that kind of thing. I would say if we're looking back at the draft, now having about 3 days worth of radio, 3 days worth of interaction with people, to me, it seems like the biggest questions coming out of the draft. If I could bullet point and highlight maybe the issues that people have with this draft, I don't sense any major angst at large. The report cards came out from all the different draft experts out there. There's like a couple dozen draft experts that do report cards. And the Texans graded out like around a B-, BB-, somewhere in there, which, you know, in a draft where you don't have a first-round pick, the ceiling on a draft like that is kind of a B-plus for a lot of folks. I think they handled the second day. I think they handled the first day just fine. I didn't have a problem with them drafting out of the first round at all, especially once the prospects kind of dried up in front of them. And then I thought they handled the second day really well, and the third day is really a lot of scratch-off day. I think if I had to summarize what I feel like the biggest issues people have with the draft are, one, they only went and got one offensive lineman in the draft. So the mechanism that people were holding out hope for finding immediate help on the offensive line, the draft, wound up being disappointing for you if that were the case. They didn't get any of the big guards that were out there. Gray Zabel, gone. Tyler Booker, gone. Donovan Jackson, gone. Kelvin Banks, a tackle, who might have ended up playing guard this year if they drafted him, gone. They were all gone, most of them well before the Texans picked. Donovan Jackson, tantalizingly close, right before the Texans picked. A couple linemen went off the board after that, but they were tackles. Josh Connerly and Josh Simmons went off the board between 25 and the start of day two. So if you were somebody who was looking for major, like a major influx of talent on the offensive line, this was probably a disappointing draft. Now, I think Ariante Ursery is a good player. He's getting good grades from people whose opinion I respect. They moved up to get him in the second round. So obviously he was somebody they wanted pretty badly. And he was sort of the consensus best O-lineman left on the board after the first day of the draft. I think the issue that I've seen people have is there's a good chance he doesn't get on the field this year. You know, he's a tackle by trade. He's a left tackle by trade. They've got Cam Robinson to do that. I don't really care as long as the O-line is better than it was last year. I think eventually the goal is for this team's tackle pair of tackles to be Ariante Ursery on the left and Blake Fisher on the right. I think in a perfect world in 2026, that would be the pair of tackles. I do think Blake Fisher is going to get on the field this year. It seems like all the indications are that Titus Howard, just by reading the behavior of the team, that Titus Howard is going to be a guard this year. But we'll see. I said this before, the two things that I would put in ink right now, barring injury, is that Cam Robinson, left tackle, and that Titus Howard is going to play. Don't know what yet. Don't know if it's left guard or right tackle. The signs of late seem to point to left guard. But those are the two things I feel most strongly about. Beyond that, it is just wide open, man. It is Braveheart. It is Game of Thrones, Battle of the Bastards. It's 10 guys weighing 300 pounds or more wielding their swords and trying to get one of what I'll say is the last three spots on the line. Again, I think Titus Howard is going to get one spot, and then Cam Robinson is going to get one spot, and then I think it's on. I think the other three could be anywhere from, you know, Lakin Tomlinson at left guard, Juice Scruggs at center, and Ed Ingram at right guard. That would be tight. Then would mean Titus is at right tackle. So let's pretend Titus is at left guard, and that would be, you know, then Jared Patterson at center, Ursery at right tackle, and then, you know, who the hell knows at right guard, you know, maybe Scruggs. So there's so many guys that have positional versatility on this roster in that position group that it's going to be the total opposite of last year. Last year at training camp, the starting offensive line was in ink on July 31st or whatever the day was that camp started. No, it was actually much earlier because the Hall of Fame game. That's right. So July 17th or whatever it was. It was Tunsil, Kenyon Green, left to right. Tunsil, Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs, Shaq Mason, Titus Howard. Period, end of subject. Now it's Cam Robinson, likely, Titus Howard somewhere, and then who the fuck knows. And that's fun. As long as they're better than they were last year. I do not expect them to be elite. I don't expect them to be great. I think the ceiling is good, and good is good enough if the weapons that you went and got for C.J. Stroud can get open. So I think that's number one. There are people that are taking issue with, did they do enough on the offensive line? Did they do enough weapon-wise for C.J.? I think that's a strong yes. I think drafting the two Iowa State kids and drafting Woody Marks are moves that directly address issues on the offense. Depth at wide receiver, some sort of weapon that's got some Tank Dell qualities to it in Jalen Noel. I know they traded for Christian Kirk. And then finding a third down back out of the backfield, I think, was massive for this team. They don't have that guy that can replace Joe Mixon on third down or on, you know, give him an occasional blow that they really trust. Now, do they trust Woody Marks yet? He's a fourth-round rookie. No, he needs to earn that trust. But just watching his film, man, like he seems a little more cut out for what the Texans at least have been trying to do in the run game the last couple of years. I expect Kaley to be maybe not, obviously not a carbon copy of Bobby Slowick, but some similar elements to the offense. So that was I'm excited about that. I think the other thing too for me, a couple things, and they're kind of entwined. A lot of people have questions about why Nick Caserio trades up so much to get guys. Again, these are all based on their evaluations, and their evaluations are based on the role they see with guys on the team. So when you look at the, you know, top 200 prospects for various draft experts, and they've got a sixth-round grade on Jalen Smith, that's a generic sixth-round grade based on what kind of cornerback he is. the Texans see certain elements to his game where it's like, okay, well, we could use a guy that's got some twitchy aspects to him that can play slot corner a little bit. We could use a guy on special teams, stuff like that. They have a higher grade on him because they see him as a fit for exactly what it is they do. I think Woody Marks, similarly, they have a need for a third down back, and no back has better hands in this draft than Woody Marks. Thus, he's graded a little higher for the Texans than he might be for other teams. I don't know if that's why. Like, I'm kind of with the people that are a little like, when I'll use Graham Mertz as an example, backup quarterback they drafted in the sixth round, traded up to do it. They gave up an extra seventh to do it. So what's the big fucking deal, right? Like, it's a seventh round pick. Who cares? But it's an extra swing at the plate if you don't do it. I don't know that, unless they have some intel we don't, I don't know that people were clamoring for Graham Mertz coming off an ACL in the sixth round. Certainty to Nick Caserio has a cost that he is willing to pay. And that pay comes in the form of draft capital. Trading up to get Jalen Smith, trading back in to get Woody Marks, trading up to get Graham Mertz. They're all things that I think confuse people sometimes. I'm just trying to explain what I think the situation is. He's willing to pay to just get it over with and get a guy. Again, unless they have intel that Graham Mertz was a hot property heading down the stretch. They talk to a lot of people, agents, people outside the building, draft experts. They talk to them all. So there's that. I think beyond that, the last thing is just speaking of Mertz, just the drafting of Mertz. I would have drafted Quinn Ewers in the sixth round ahead of Graham Mertz. I just don't think Mertz is very good. Whatever, it's the sixth round. They see some things in him, and maybe he, between Gerard Johnson and Nick Haley, maybe they coach him up. I don't think, obviously, I don't think he sees the field this year, you know, barring something happening to Davis Mills. Mertz is coming off of an ACL. Jonathan Alexander actually made this point in an article he wrote for the Chronicle for today or yesterday. Oh, it was a 53-man roster that he did, the way-too-early 53-man roster. I'm going to be doing mine for the Houston Press tomorrow. But he brought up a really good point, which is they draft Mertz, and they can just put him on the PUP list or injured reserve, and he's basically getting a redshirt year. So your quarterback room is C.J. Stroud, Davis Mills, maybe Keaton Slovis is your practice squad guy who you can elevate, whatever. And Graham Mertz can just sit and learn for a year. So I understand the thought process behind it. I just don't think he's a player worth drafting. But again, it's a six-round pick, whatever. So but the big thing is the offensive line, and was always going to be the big thing coming into this draft. And I think by and large, people are happy with Ursary, given where they got him. Still a lot of angst over what this is going to look like. This offensive line is a huge bet on Nick Caley and Cole Popovich. Nick Caley, the new OC, and Cole Popovich, the new offensive line coach, the promoted offensive line coach. He was the assistant O-line coach last year. He gets a bump up. So, so those are the main things. Been a slow, you know, other than the draft, kind of a slow week for things. I don't even know what to expect the next news to be now that the Jalen Petrie contract extension has come down. I don't know that they're making any trades anytime soon. I can't think of any other pending or contract extensions that are kind of hanging over the team right now. So let's get to the mailbag. Again, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. You can see it right there at the bottom of the screen if you are watching on our YouTube and Twitch stream. By the way, you can watch Sports Radio 610 on YouTube and Twitch as well. You can watch us do our shows every morning. Highly entertaining. All right, mailbag time. JR and Spicewood, what's the latest on Tank Dell's recovery, and do you think that affects when or if they draft a wide receiver? I kept this one in, even though this is kind of a pre-draft question. The latest on Tank is they're not really saying. Tank has been seen out and about, and he looks like he's moving pretty decently, but I would say I kept that question in here because I do think that, especially with Jalen Knoll, where there's a lot of overlap in terms of skill set, that I think we can tell by the behavior of the Texans over the last couple of months, trading for Christian Kirk, drafting two receivers, particularly one that has some tank-like qualities to him, that they do not expect him to play this season. So I'm looking ahead to 2026. They're going to miss Tank, but I really like what they did in the draft. Every evaluation of Jalen Knoll that I've seen or heard or sat next to, in the case of John Harris, they all had him, the ones I've seen, higher than where he got drafted. Todd McShay had him in his top 32, Jalen Knoll. So That's something. I think he had him as the number two receiver. He had Higgins and Noel as number two and number four, and I can't remember which was which, but I do remember him saying he had Noel in his on his big board in the top 32. So if he was number four, that means Higgins was in there as well, along with, I would guess, Matthew Golden and Tet McMillan, if I had to guess. I haven't looked at McShay's big board. I just know he's really, really high on both of those guys, Noel and Higgins. So not counting on Tank back next year. I finally arrived at a place where I'm like, okay, I'm okay with this. I hate that he's hurt, but this is where we are. They've addressed the needs. I do think that, I don't know if anybody asked this, but like if we're looking, they draft two wide receivers. So there's some guys that are going to need to have their head on a swivel. They draft two. They sign a couple of them. They sign Braxton Berrios. They sign Justin Watson from Kansas City. Berrios, most recently with the Dolphins, I believe. Dolphins or Jet. He's been a Dolphin. He's been a Jet. He's got the influencer, the TikTok influencer girlfriend, Alex Earl. You know, look, between those two, Xavier Hutchinson, John Mechie, you've got two locks to make the team. Let me put it this way. JR, I'm going to use your question as a way to lay out the wide receiver room. Nico Collins and Christian Kirk are going to start for this team. Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel are making the 53-man roster. And then John Mechie is still under contract. Xavier Hutchinson still under contract. We're at six guys now. Then you've got Braxton Berrios. You've got Justin Watson. You've still got a few guys lingering around from the practice squad the last couple of years. Johnny Johnson. You've got Jared Wayne. I don't expect either of those guys to make the team. Maybe the practice squad. My point being, I think if there's anybody whose head needs to be on a swivel, it's probably John Mechie. You know, I think just we're beyond the point now where it's, you know, you're writing things off because of his cancer condition a couple of years ago, the ACL that he came into the league, like all these things. Like he's physically 100% again, and he's not getting open consistently. Xavier Hutchinson gets open more than John Mechie does. I don't think either of them are very safe in terms of making the team, but I think Mechie's the guy that needs to have his head on a swivel right now. And I wish that weren't the case. I like John Mechie. But it's show friends. It's not show friends. It's show business. All right. TJ in Fort Worth. Never thought I'd say this, but I'm questioning your pettiness, Sean. Last week, you were given the opportunity to curse any AFC South team's draft, and you only considered Indy and Jacksonville. Buddy, oh, he buddied me. Oof. The only correct and obvious answer was Tennessee. A fan of Houston sports should never pass on an opportunity, real or imagined, to inflict suffering on that fan base. I'm going to need you to do better. TJ, you're funny. And that question was one that got in the deleted episode, so I wanted to make sure I got that one in. That goes back to Chris in the ATL asking me to hex one team in the AFC South to hex their draft, where they just pick the wrong guys, guys have off-the-field issues, whatever you would think a hex looks like. And I picked, I really struggled with Indianapolis and Jacksonville as my two in the division. Here's why I didn't pick Tennessee. Tennessee will find a way to fuck it up themselves. They don't need a hex from me to do that. It would be a waste of a hex. They are a walking hex. They hex themselves just fine. Tennessee's terrible. I think Indianapolis, I think Chris Ballard is a solid GM. Obviously, he's been the steward of an organization. Sorry, I keep drinking. I'm trying to keep my throat wet, wet my whistle. Obviously, he's been heading up an organization that's won one playoff game since he got there. So it's hard for me to say he's a great GM. But he, when he talks, he makes sense. When he makes moves, they make sense. And if he's, you know, if he's been a victim of anything, the Andrew Luck retirement has led into this endless cycle of trying to find a quarterback. Now, I pity nobody who's got a who voluntarily puts a quarterback room together of Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones. But my point is, they are worth hexing. The mystery, the wild card in all this, when this question was asked and when I answered it the first time, pre-draft, was Jacksonville. Because we don't know anything about the Magnificent Gladstone. James Gladstone, their GM, who on our show we call the Magnificent Gladstone because he magically tries to bury you under 20 words of 15 letters or more. He's the Magnificent Gladstone, or as some call him, the Magic G. So without knowing what he was all about, knowing that Jacksonville themselves as an organization have fucked up many a thing, it would be easy for me to treat them like Tennessee and say, well, they'll mess it up, but I don't know about this Gladstone character. So I think now, ultimately, if I were to hex, and the draft is come and gone, so I think I ultimately landed on Jacksonville, if I remember correctly, because I just wanted Gladstone to fail so badly. If it's a waste of a hex, so be it. If it guarantees Gladstone, this is me. This is like Nick Caserio trading up to get somebody who I think he doesn't need to trade up for. I am using my hex on Jacksonville, even though there's a chance I may not need to. They might be able to hex themselves. So we'll see. That Travis Hunter trade will dictate how this draft goes for them and where their first round pick is next year, which is now Cleveland, belongs to Cleveland. That'll dictate how good this move and this draft was for them. I thought Gladstone's explanation or his introduction of Travis Hunter was one of the most absurd things I've ever seen in my life, where he spends a minute giving this speech that he rehearsed in the mirror that morning, where he talks about the sport of football injecting belief into all of us and Travis Hunter changing the sport of football. What are we doing, man? What the fuck are you talking about? He's ridiculous. And you Jacksonville people, and I know there's a few of you that listen to this podcast, the way that you sop up everything he says with a biscuit is embarrassing to you, okay? So my hex would go to the magnificent Gladstone, and we'll see if the hex worked. You know, if Travis Hunter gets pulled over doing 120 in a school zone with a hooker in the passenger seat while snorting a line of blow, hex worked. I don't think that's going to happen. All right, so that was TJ in Fort Worth. Bobby says the NFL draft is really just a crapshoot of educated guesses and hypotheticals, and hypotheticals are a useless exercise. I don't care about any of that. My question is, looking at Texans' first-round draft history, which of these change-the-pick scenarios would you rather go back in time and swap? Okay, so he gives me four that I can choose from. I can make any of these swaps. Go back in time, knowing what I know now. Would I swap Amobi Okoye for Patrick Willis in 2007? Patrick Willis, Hall of Famer. Brian Cushing for Clay Matthews in 2009. Jadeveon Clowney for Khalil Mack in 2014. Or Kenyon Green for Tyler Linderbaum in 2022. And he says, or is there someone that I haven't thought of? The only other Texans first round pick kind of over the last few years that I would mix in here, and I'd have to go look at the 2015 draft to go see who I would take instead of him. But Kevin Johnson didn't turn out well for Kevin Johnson here, the cornerback. Best part about Kevin Johnson is his sister was a Ravens cheerleader. That was pretty cool. Of the four that you gave me, Amobi Okoye for Patrick Willis, Brian Cushing for Clay Matthews, Jadeveon Clowney for Khalil Mack. Look, these are all swaps for players swapping a Texan draft pick, a first-round pick, for a guy who is better than them. So I would go execute any of these. The closest one is probably Cushing for Clay Matthews. The first three seasons, God, even 2010, though, he had the PED suspension. Yeah, no. I would say the bottom two would be Cushing for Clay Matthews, because Cushing was a good player when he was here. He was a Pro Bowler maybe once or twice. He was good. Clowney was a three-time Pro Bowler as a Texan. Would I swap back for Khalil Mack? Of course I would. Khalil Mack turned out to be a better player than Clowney, but Clowney was not a bad player. Amobi Okoye was not good, and Kenyon Green was outright terrible. So mine would definitely be Kenyon Green for Tyler Linderbaum. Kenyon Green was a disaster on multiple levels, medically, playing-wise, what they could have had instead of him. And I'm not even talking about Linderbaum. I'm talking about Kyle Hamilton. You know, they could have stayed at 13 instead of trading back and taking Green and taking Kyle Hamilton instead. So to me, that's an easy choice. It's Kenyon Green for Tyler Linderbaum. All right, Cody from McMahon. I love a town named McMahon. You have to talk about this in the mailbag episode. Can someone please explain to me these Can fans that show up at the draft and cheer for their pick no matter what? Browns fans happy they're trading down and not taking Travis Hunter. What in the world of sports is going on here? it's the draft, the fans that go to the draft, by and large, I'm just thinking of the draft. I'm thinking of like our draft party here and thinking of the people I know that go to the draft. Those are people where it's really hard for the team to do wrong. You know, like if you're at all sourable on what your team does in the draft, especially when they're picking high, you're probably choosing not to spend money to go to Green Bay and stand in a 200,000 person massive humanity. That's just my guess. So I get it. You know, like those aren't the ultra critical sports fans. You know what I mean, Cody? Don't get frustrated by them. Don't get frustrated by people that are just happy all the time, man. Good for them. Good for them if they're happy all the time. I'm not one of those people. Sorry. I'm happy most of the time. But I would be one of those people looking very critically at my team picking. Cody, I'm one of you. But let's not fault the people that are up there just trying to slather themselves in joy, delusional as that joy may be. You mentioned the Jets fans. They took Armand Membu. I get it. Offensive tackle is not a sexy position, but it's a necessary position, and they need one in New York. All right, Joe Q is in. My man. How would you power rank Nick's performance by position group? The roster is now wholly his almost, other than Titus and Fairbairn left over from Bill O'Brien's last team. And so let me open up your email, Joe Q, because it has a chart in it. And charts don't translate real well to cutting and pasting into my Word document. Joe Q grades it as follows. A+ for secondary, A for quarterback, which includes the return on the Deshaun trade for him, A- defensive line, B+ linebacker. And this is over the course of, I'm assuming, Nick's tenure here, not just how the position looks now, because you mentioned Blake Cashman in the linebacker box. So this is how he's done as a whole. Running back, B. I'm trying to get to one where I disagree with. I agree with everything. A+ secondary, A quarterback, A- D line. You know, if we're gonna say edge rusher counts as D line, that might even push to an A given Will Anderson and Daniil Hunter currently on the team. You got to remember the first 2 years while Nick was here was a major clean out and clean up process. B+ for linebacker. Harris and Toa Toa have shown flashes. Aziz was a good signing. Cashman's contribution. Yeah, I can go with B+ there. B for running back. The value in the mix and trade, modest value from Pierce as a day three pick, and then Cam Akers, but he was only on the team for a few weeks. I might bump running back down a little bit. God, remember that running back? And I know I just said to ignore 2021 and 2022, but my God, when he kept David Johnson around and we had Mark Ingram and Philip Lindsay running the football, that was just, I mean, that to me, that's an F, you know? I think some of how they've handled Damian Pierce too, I don't know if Damian should still be on the team, and they've kind of stuck with Damian, even though they don't use him. I would probably bump running back down slightly. Receiver C is interesting to me because he drafted Nico Collins, who's one of the best receivers in football. He drafted Tank Dell, who granted has been injured, but when he's been on the field, he's been really good. The Diggs trade didn't work out. I don't downgrade him for the Diggs trade as much as some do because it didn't work out because of injury. I thought it was working out fine when he was healthy. The Mechie pick is not a good one. Traded up to get John Mechie with the 44th pick. Would have been nice for one of those three to work out. And then optimistic on Kirk. I think Nico alone, getting Nico in the third round is, I mean, he's putting up DeAndre Hopkins, Andre Johnson kind of numbers in these 2 years since they got a real quarterback. So I think that alone, to me, bumps receiver up to maybe a C+ or a B-. Like, I think he's done, like, receiver and running back. Like, you see a whole letter grade difference between what he's done at running back and what he's done at receiver. I don't know. I don't see that. So I would kind of meet in the middle on both of those and say B- for receiver and running back. Tight end, C. I might even downgrade that one a little bit. The Dalton Schultz contract is a big one there. That might be a C-. Offensive line, F. I mean, it's hard to give a grade anywhere above a D on the offensive line. So if you want to give them an F, by all means. I mean, their behavior this offseason is indicative of a team that has stockpiled offensive linemen at an F level. So, yeah, I think you and I are in agreement on a lot of those, Joe Q. I think we're in agreement on a lot of those. Good question. Hopefully I wasn't like too choppy in laying that out for you guys as to he put a chart together, Joe Q did, where he letter graded each position group. I'm going to bring that on the show, I think. That's a really, really fun question. All right, couple more, and then we'll roll. Brian from Iowa, does Nick have maroon and gold-colored glasses on? Iowa State, Minnesota, USC. I'm excited for the picks and curious about rounds 4 through 7. Go Cyclones. That was from, obviously, after day 2 of the draft. That was funny, Brian. BK has a shout-out here for me and John Harris for our draft coverage. Thank you, BK. Appreciate that. Totally get going wide receiver with the early picks, especially because the vest has a good track record in day 2 wideouts. Yeah, see Joe Q? He's got a good track record. You know what he doesn't have a good track record doing, BK says? Drafting linemen. Now, not saying he's made the pick he's made is a bust. I think Blake Fisher actually looks like he can play outside tackle in this league compared to how Nicky hits on wide receivers and defensive back. He's muffed a few. So I give him credit. This is BK continuing. Hey, I'm not good at drafting interior O-linemen either. He's loaded up on free agents and at least has a track record of who have a track record of competing at the NFL level in the right scheme. I wonder if Nick was self-aware on less than great draft evaluation on the O-line and was like, hell of a lot better to miss on a 1 or 2 year free agent contract than miss on a second or third rounder. That's an interesting theory. Seeing his own blind spot, knowing that draft capital is probably a higher premium than salary cap space of $5 million or whatever Ed Ingram's making this year, you know, or Lakin Tomlinson. That's a really interesting theory because we know that draft picks themselves are worth more than that big a salary spot. And I say that because I've used Cleveland as an example. The Browns, if you remember, when they traded for Brock Osweiler, they took on like $16 million in guaranteed money for the Texans stapling a second-round pick to Brock Osweiler. They were buying a second-round pick for about $16 million. So that's a really, really interesting theory. BK goes on to call John Runyon a punk-ass bitch again. So there we go there. Ryan from the Shug, Sean Hope all as well. A draft question to add to your stack right now. What do you think about the draft in the context of Nick Caley saying CJ would be able to call more audibles? Seems to me like they're setting him up to have many different checkdowns with Woody Marks, with Christian Kirk and Noel Higgins and Nico Collins being bigger targets. I don't know if how they handle the offense would have changed the way they've gone about the draft. I do think he's got more items on the dashboard to work with, though. I'm very, very excited about that. But I can get with that theory that if we're going to change the offense, and for those who haven't seen, CJ is going to get more control at the line of scrimmage in the offense, reportedly, from Nick Caley. He'll be able to change the protections and look and see what the defense is doing. And then he makes the decision as to what the team should do at the line of scrimmage. I'm very anxious to see how that works out for CJ. He's made it clear he did not have that power with Bobby Slowick. Coach Mike, Sean, I know the saying is that all about the Jimmies and Joes. What's going on with the Texans drafting all Jadens and Jalens? It's true. They add 4 more for a total of 24 people with the name that begins with J on the roster. Obviously, there's a conspiracy here. Can you explain what it is? Yes, the conspiracy is Nick Caserio is trying to make Seth Payne's head explode. I was joking about it after day 2 of the draft where they had a Jaden and 2 Jalens, and then they draft another Jalen on day 3. I texted Seth condolences when that happened. All right, a couple more. Edmund in full shear. Nick Caserio has not drafted players except from the Power 4 conferences. I know that they play against the stiffest competition, which makes evaluation easier. Would the team be better served by widening their evaluations to the rest of NCAA football? They do. They evaluate everybody. I get what you're saying. If they cast their net and actually draft a few of those guys, would it be any better? I don't know. Nick's done pretty good in the draft doing it this way. You know, I don't look at – there's never been a moment where I've said they need more small school guys. Gray Zabel might be the interesting one because they reportedly wanted him. They were trying to trade up to get him. We'll see how he turns out. But I don't have any issue with the approach that they're taking. And finally, TJ in Fort Worth gets in again. Is there a possibility they do with Ursary what the Texans did with Dwayne Brown early in his career, splitting time with Ephraim Salaam? So would they do a split of Ursary and Cam Robinson? I don't think so. I hope they don't, to be honest with you. I think you need chemistry. I think you need 5 guys moving in sync, that whole thing. I think, look, Ursary's going to get on the field at some point. This we know. They've had injuries at tackles the last three. You know, there's so he's going to get on the field. I would not like to see them do that. I want to see him compete. If he can compete and he's the best lineman, then put him out there and let him play, you know? All right, we've got a few more in here. I'm going to save them only because I got to get going. So Jason and Leander, your question about why The Rock is trying to ruin WWE, that'll evergreen just fine into the next mailbag. Some of you asking my thoughts on Shedeur Sanders. I need longer than I have right now to share my thoughts on that. But hopefully we hit some good Texans topics for you guys in this mailbag and in this podcast. So a quick thank you to Jared Rowland, my producer, who's getting this podcast out to you each and every week. And a big thanks to all of you for listening. Again, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. You see at the bottom of the screen right there. And subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, Utopia Football Podcast. So until till the next mailbag, I don't think there's going to be another episode this week. Till next week's mailbag, send me some more questions. We'll do another big one next week. Have a great week. Go Texans. Enjoy. And Rockets, please, please, please win a game. Just win on Wednesday, and then we'll go from there. All right? Love you guys. See ya.